Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. We're welcome to this live edition on iRibe English Radio on the 9th day of the month of Muharram. We extend our condolences on the arrival of this month and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Please stay tuned with this live edition for about 1 hour.
To Karbala, leave me there, leave me with Hussain, 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 Hussain.
Welcome back. You're listening to us live on this month of Muharram, the day which is mainly known as At-Taswa, the 9th day of the month of Muharram. For today's discussion, I have Shaykh Hussain Latifi and Sayyid Mudarrisi with me in the studio. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh Hussain. Welcome to the show.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah.
And Sayyid Mudarrisi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum as-salam. Thank you for having us. And I also express my deepest condolences on the occasion of this
thank
day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. A rather different month of Muharram for the nation of resistance, the people of Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the first Muharram that they don't feel the presence of their supreme leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. So many of their military commanders, the beautiful schoolgirls and boys of Minab, and so many beautiful souls of the civilians that lost their lives during the imposed Zio-American war and attacks against Islamic Republic of Iran. What an unfortunate loss it was, especially the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran, a resistant man who has always insisted on the rationality of resistance, that there is a rationality and reasoning behind resistance against the enemies of Islam and the oppressors. That's why we want to dedicate today's discussion to this very topic, the rationality and reasoning behind resistance. So many people, when logically take a look at the story of Karbala and the event that took place in the 10th day of Muharram 61 AH, Sheikh Latifi might say that it was not a logical action because the army of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was about 100-120 maybe, and the army of the forces of the enemy about 30,000. So it doesn't seem to be a logical action. But why did Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam resisted against the enemy of his time, and what was his logic and rationality behind his decision?
Thank you very much. It's a good question, and actually concerns us today because there's this mentality imposed on the people of resistance that these people are irrational, they are doing something out of their emotions only, they don't have a strategic thinking.
And they're seeking war.
Yeah, they're seeking war, terrorists, something like that. So in Quran, we also have this. There were some people who thought that they are more rational than their brothers. They would say, okay, don't go to wars. Mm-hmm. Well, Quran says, even if they stayed at home, they would die someday. Okay, yeah. So if you think you're being smart in just escaping what is your obligation, doesn't help you. So this is important to address. And also in the case of Karbala, there is this long discussion or controversy whether Karbala was a political ambition or a suicidal mission, something like this, that some people, even in recent times, they would say that there are two camps. Some people would say Imam Hussein from the beginning knew that he was going to be martyred and regardless, mm-hmm. without any political or strategic calculation, he just got himself martyred.
Yes.
And in the other camp, there are people who think that, no, it was a political ambition, but it failed.
Yes.
And Imam martyred Sayyid Ali Husseini Khamenei in his book, 250-year-old person. He says that both of these are wrong. They did not understand mm-hmm. the division between the goal and the outcome.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you start a campaign, you have a goal, okay? Mm-hmm. And that goal for Imam Hussein was to rectify and correct the deviation that took place in the Ummah of his Prophet.
That's it.
And but the outcome would not be out of two options, either martyrdom or establishment of the government of justice. Both of them could serve justice in a different way. Mm-hmm. But the goal is always there, to correct the deviation. You cannot just stay silent. So back to your question, if any person who is under injustice or oppression
yes.
has such calculation, you will never have justice rectified and you will never have justice served in the human history. Political campaigns, they have risks, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, there should be some people to rise up against injustice. And this is not restricted to Islam. In any culture, in any group in history,
yes.
you have this, that they take a stance against injustice and oppression. And yes, there's a price for that to be paid.
Yes.
But to remain in an unjust order itself is irrational
mm-hmm.
Because it does not serve your interest. Mm-hmm. In this way, you can say,
yes.
okay, slavery was good as well. Those people who were enslaved,
yes.
they did not have the right to aspire for their freedom
mm-hmm.
because it was irrational. Just
yes.
accept the harmony, accept the order, and then just live. Nobody says that.
This is a new type of reasoning and wisdom that also attracted so many people. When you were talking, I just really remember one of the famous sentences or quotes by Charles Dickens. You know that Charles Dickens, the famous novelist, has a beautiful sentence about Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He says that if Hussein failed to quench his worldly desires, then I don't understand why his sisters, wives, and children accompanied him. It stands to reason, therefore, that he sacrificed purely for Islam.
Mm, yes.
I mean, this last part of this novel, is Charles Dickens, is really interesting, that it stands to reason, therefore, he sacrificed purely for Islam. So we have sacrifice in one hand and reason in the other hand. Mm. How these two come together, especially with today's system of calculation for the oppressors. I mean, they all have this always calculus and calculation that if you want to sacrifice your comfort zone, on that time you'll miss everything.
Mm.
So how come sacrifice and reasoning together, Sayyid Moderisi?
Well, I think continuing where our dear guest mentioned, continuing where he left off, I think we'd better mention why some people believe that this is a kind of suicidal mission. This
mm-hmm.
is something that rather the end is predetermined and you cannot change it. The point is, I mean, I'm elaborating on what our dear friend mentioned here, that they do not understand that this rectifying the situation is not an instant happening.
Yes.
It could be a gradual and step-by-step situation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reach the very aim that you actually have risen up for.
Yes.
But you have to have actually a higher ground in order to understand mm-hmm. if that is happening.
And there is no sign of weakness in that.
Very good.
I mean, on different stations when Imam al-Hussein
you
is
see more
a speech,
resolution.
Yeah, it's just like a solution, like guiding the people to the right path. You could see in any case, from Medina to Karbala, Imam al-Hussein says that, okay, I'm feeling weak now, or for example, just help me because of this, because of that. All you see is logic and reasoning.
Yeah.
And, you know, how these two come together in this narrative, I call the kind of divine narrative, okay, is really, really important, that how Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam reached such a narrative that could outlast the event itself.
Very good.
I mean, in 61 AH, something take place, but the narrative outlasts the event.
For that to happen, you need to connect your aim,
mm-hmm.
the aim for which you are rising for,
mm-hmm.
to connect it to something divine that is perpetual,
okay.
that is impermanent, that is permanent, actually.
Yes.
So if that thing is permanent, you can actually have reached something higher
yes.
than the geographic boundary that
right.
you are bound to, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So using it for our contemporary situation here, mm-hmm. I think most of the people should understand these, they should understand that victory, I mean, victory cannot be achieved without losing some dear things we've got.
Yes.
I mean, look at our situation here.
Mm-hmm.
What have we lost? We have lost many of our secretary generals. We have lost our dear rahbar. We have lost many of the children of Minab.
Yes.
We have lost many of our people. But what can be achieved is far more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you cannot win the war if you have this mentality that this is merely losing.
Yes.
No, of course this is losing. But if you take the higher ground to understand what is going on, how the situation has changed, then you can have a better understanding and you can act upon it.
We get more to the contemporary affairs of today as well, that how this resistance was mm-hmm. embodied in the geopolitical analysis and the ideology of Islamic Republic of Iran in contemporary 21st century, that according to so many analysts, Sheikh Latifi helped Islamic Republic of Iran to survive after losing its leadership and so many of its high-ranking military officials. And this is the secret to, we can say, the survival of Islamic Republic of Iran. The leadership is still going on and it's stronger than before. I mean, the fruits that were ripped after the victory of the third imposed war against Islamic Republic of Iran show that how resistance might have some costs, but the benefits are more. I mean, the ultimate cost-benefit analysis is really beautiful over here, because according to the logic, if you are going to, we can say, do not take the benefits and it is only cost on that time, you are the loser of the war and the game. But in the case of Islamic Republic of Iran in today's world, very much influenced by the narrative of Imam al-Hussein and the Husseini movement and Ashura movement, you know, you could find that it is all victory coming after resistance. So how come that you resist, you a little bit lose, okay, and then you become victorious?
Well, that's the nature of any political campaign. You run for presidency, you invest money, you do a lot of efforts, and then at the end of the day, you might either lose or win. And any political campaign has this level of risk in it.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the other choices that you have, sometimes you say, okay, you had the other choice to stay at home. But for the case of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he did not have that choice. His daughter asked him that, "Father, can we just go back to Medina when they arrived in Karbala?" The mom said, "Law turika al-qatala nam." If they had left me alone in Medina, I would not have lived. I would not have left the Medina in the first place.
Yes.
So sometimes the situation is that you're losing your chance of other options. You don't, like in the case of Iran, what Imam Khomeini was telling us was that this person, this movement, this kingdom, whatever that was there, it's going to change the totality and the identity of a Muslim nation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had the example of Turkey, where they changed the alphabet, they changed all the things.
Ataturk land,
yes.
That's right.
So what you see in some of the countries, Muslim countries nowadays, that all the resources are at the behest of the other powers, mm-hmm. all the... So...
And we know that, historically speaking, it was after the travel of Reza Khan to Turkey that he came back and started his so-called reforms and reformations.
So then there's this occasion in Islamic, in Shia fiqhs, they say there is no taqiyya there.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the stakes are so high that you're losing the whole ground to the other side. But it happens gradually, you don't notice it. Like smart people like Imam Khomeini notices it. If you don't take initiative in the right time, it arrives at the no return point, mm-hmm. and then there would be very difficult.
Yes.
So, and also coming back to how the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was inspiring for us, nobody, I think, phrases it better than the orange pick himself. Have you heard him, Trump, yesterday?
What was it?
He said that we realized something like this, something like that the ideology of the Venezuelans and Iranians are different. You see, he thought that he can do some operation in Iran,
mm-hmm.
like Venezuela.
Yes.
But now that he realized, he hit hard with reality.
Mm-hmm.
He says what? He says, no, we realize that the ideology of Iranians are different. And he attributes that to the ideology of Iranians.
Okay.
He attributes the victory of Iranians and the difference between Iran and Venezuela to the ideology. So he realizes that this stems from, not from the geographical, not from this and that, but from the ideological.
And this is the main line that was drawn between the Islamic Republic of Iran from first day of establishment and the so-called leftist communist, you know, blocks of power that also, we can say, they contributed in overthrowing of the Shah, okay? Because ideologically speaking, they had such Western, anti-Western approaches, the communist block, the Eastern part of the world too. But now, when they got to the Islamic Revolution of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini made a clear line between Islamic Republic of Iran, Husseini movement, and the communist one. And today you could see that the scenario of Venezuela is going to topple down the first leader, Maduro, okay, in Venezuela, but not Islamic Republic of Iran. This is because the rich legacy of the history of Shiism, as you said, the analyst, the Western one calls it, for example, the ideology, is helping the system to go on and on. But even in we can say American countries might not help them in today's 21st century.
It takes them to a certain distance, but not longer.
Longer, that's right. That's
they have to be connected to something, I think, in order to reach that level.
The value system, that's right.
The value system, yes. Because if they can find a meaning in what they are fighting for, they can go on. So if they can find this meaning, they can endure. They can endure any challenge. I mean, what I'm saying is, if people have a convincing reason, a kind of convincing explanation for the hardship they're enduring, they will endure whatever it is.
Yes.
I mean, it is not the level of these hardships that actually topple a regime. It is just the level of understanding how much people can tolerate.
Yes.
And that's the point. If you are connected, if you have connected your aim for something permanent, for something higher than these mundane aspects of life, then you can endure the hardships.
That's it. Okay. So the logic posits that surrender, we can say, might be a safer option to the face of the tyrannies and the oppressors of the time, since they are much powerful. But the history has shown that, okay, even they might be, militarily speaking, more successful than the oppressed one. But in the long term, as Sheikh Latifi very beautifully puts it, you know, the victory is in the hands of the oppressed ones on the history. And this is because they have always said never to humiliation. We have this beautiful phrase, Hayhat ve nazella, I mean, no to humiliation or never to humiliation. Thank you very much, Sheikh Latifi and Sayyid Mudarrisi, for being with us on this live edition on IRIB English Radio on the ninth day of the month of Muharram. Again, we extend our heartfelt condolences to you Muslims all around the world, especially the Axis of Resistance and the Nation of Islamic Republic of Iran. Taking a break, Hayhat min nazella.
Say no to humiliation. This important and basic slogan, which is really meaningful, has been rooted in that history. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam declared that since Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the prophets and believers and pure intellects do not accept his surrender, he chooses death over humiliation. So he was a person to prioritize death over humiliation, not to be humiliated, but to die. Some sources have narrated ad-daniya instead of ad-dhilla. Hayhat min ad-dhilla, hayhat min ad-daniya, and never to debasement. This motto is used among the teachings of Ashura in marches and rituals of Muharram and Safar. So we came to learn that what is important for us is our self-esteem. As far as we are the servants of Allah, we're not going to surrender before anyone except Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in case we're entrapped or we are caught, the only thing that we can say, hayhat min nadallah, never to humiliation.
Welcome back. You're listening to us live on IRIB English Radio. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Latifi Said Mudarrisi are joined with me in the studio over here, and we are talking about the logic and the reason behind resistance of Imam al-Hussein's movement and in today's world, Islamic Republic of Iran, and what is known as the axis of resistance all across the world. And alhamdulillah, today Sheikh Latifi Said Mudarrisi, resistance is not limited only to Islamic Republic of Iran, Yemen, or Iraq. We could see that this resistance narrative is showing itself in the discourse and the narrative of so many Western powers, even itself. I mean, I'm talking about, for example, such countries like Ireland or Spain, you know, by condemning the attacks on the Gaza and Palestine, have shown that somehow they know what is resistance and how resistance in the face of the oppressors is beneficial even for today's world. But now, Sheikh Latifi, as we said, the core logic of resistance is the natural reaction to injustice. And in today's world, there are so many international bodies talking about the justice, implementing justice, but we cannot see the real justice. I mean, do you believe that the justice that is coming after surrender is a beautiful justice? And is it possible that the justice is benefited out of, I mean, oppression in today's world?
Actually, what comes after surrender, it depends on which surrender are we talking. If we talk about this,
I mean the total surrender that some people talk about.
Yes, unconditional surrender of somebody who has not done something, anything wrong. Okay, that is called. It's not called justice. It's called order.
Okay? Order.
That is something. Uh-huh. It's peace without justice.
Yes.
So, and when we say in English this motto, they say no peace, no justice. No, yes. No justice, no peace.
Yes.
Means that. It doesn't live long, mm-hmm. right, because it mm-hmm. is not based on justice. Why? Because justice is something that is based on your instinct, on your human fitra.
All right.
Okay? And when it is based on that, it doesn't mean it doesn't have a strategic aspect.
All right.
Everything that you do is, even if you want to talk about it in an evolutionary theory,
yes.
it is the instinct of your survival.
Mm-hmm.
When you say some people, some countries, European countries participate in resistance, I don't want to say they don't do it out of their value system or anything. I'm trying to say that even if you take things at a strategic level, they can realize that unleashed corruption, uncontrolled, unchecked behavior of
yes.
an entity in an international community is going to harm them in the long run.
Yes.
So if you even have the...
Do you think this is understood, for example, today by our national bodies, especially when we're talking about Israel and Zionism?
I think one by one, they're waking up. They realize that if they can get away with Gaza, if mm-hmm. they can get away with Lebanon, if mm-hmm. they can get away with whatever they're doing in the media in
yes.
covering up their
yes.
crimes, then it's going to set a very bad precedent for others as well. They think, yeah, this international community is something that we can do such a thing in.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to correct the record, what they say in
yes.
a strategic thinking.
Yes.
So I'm saying that in the history and the story of Karbala, what happened was that people realized after Yazid could do that to the family of the Prophet, mm-hmm. then he felt liberty to do even worse things
very
to
good.
Medina and
yes.
other areas.
Yes. Yes.
So this is a lesson of history that standing against oppression is not something emotional mm-hmm. or ideological only. It's something strategic. If you don't raise your voice, Even if you know yes. that it doesn't have immediate effect, but in the long run, you're setting and correcting the record so that later on they don't feel free to do whatever they want to do.
And the thirst for power and the bloodshed,
yes.
we go on. As in the story of Yazid, it was not limited to yeah. Karbala. The yeah. story of Hara take place.
Yeah.
You know, and these, you know, so sorry to say that, but so many children out of wedlock
yes,
were born,
yes.
you know. And after that, the attack on the Kaaba, house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the case of Israel today, again, for example, it started with just taking Gaza, genocide over there, and then Lebanon. And what is beautiful, this shows the logic, I think, in the negotiations of Islamic Republic of Iran with United States of America, that the first article is tying its negotiation with the case of Lebanon.
Yes.
So it is not defending a proxy. It is stopping Israel from, you know...
The only proxy yes. in the region is Israel itself. It's the Western
yes,
proxy.
Very good. That's it. All right.
And the enemy side, I think, what uses in what Latifi mentioned is that tries to use its power to make people afraid.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this fear causes yes. people not to rise up, not to stand against this corruption side. And
yes.
I think I remember a quote by one of our martyrs in Iran, Martyr Avini, that he said, Satan has built its rule and kingdom upon fear.
Mm. Yes, yes.
So he says that you will, what this means, what this implies, is that you will not reach what you want unless you let go of these fears, let go of the fear of losing your life, let go the fear of losing your leader, let go the fear of receiving an atomic bomb or being faced by the enemy, by the so-called hegemonic power of the
yes.
world.
Yes.
You have to let go of these fears in order to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And this side of Lebanon that you
yes.
mentioned, I remember a quote from Imam Khomeini that he said, there is one mysterious key in this world that it will open up to a world of new things that
yes.
we do not conceive of and
That's
understand,
right.
and that is Gaza
yes.
and Quds
yes.
to be freed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Lebanon is playing an important role.
Yes.
Maybe that mysterious key to open something is Lebanon today.
Yes.
Because those are the very people that need help, but at the very same time, they're fighting on
yes.
their own.
This was a prediction made by the late Imam Khomeini more than 40 years ago. Still, the footage is fresh as day one. You could see that, say, Israel will not limit itself to take Palestine. It will come after Syria, Iraq, you know.
Mm.
He's mentioning the names of the countries.
Mm.
So also
one
Islamic,
group,
I mean, the bigger plan and the bigger map of the Israel on that time. So was in their minds the late Imam Khomeini could do so. And that's why it is called the tumorous. We got the cancerous tumor, you know, of Israel
right.
and the great Satan, you know, hand in hand and allies. So in a recent interview, Vance, the vice president of the United States of America with the famous podcaster, said that when asked that what does Netanyahu want and the Israel want, he said, I don't know. Then the podcaster emphasized again and re-asked the question, so what does he want? He said, I don't know, but we are aligned on the same plan to stop Iran from having a nuclear weapon or a nuclear bomb or something like that. I mean, it shows again that under clumsy pretexts and excuses, they want to stop this resistance movement, what the power that, according to Sayyid Mudarrisi, does not fear and is not afraid of the hegemony powers. All right. So in the Shia calendar, especially of Islamic Republic of Iran, the ninth day of Muharram is very much a tribute and affiliated with the name of Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas. Of course, for the information of our dear listeners, I must say that all the martyrs of Karbala have lost their lives during the day of Ashura. It is not so as if Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas was martyred on the ninth day. No. Maybe in 1-2, maybe at least 3 hours, the whole martyrdom scenario took place on the day of Ashura, and what a massacre and catastrophe it was. As we, today we could see that in one shot, one attack, more than 100 missiles out, you know, attack 1,000 Lebanon. And all of a sudden you could see 400, 500 people lose their life, okay?
Mm.
So, I mean, Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas, you know, he was the supreme embodiment of the rationality of resistance, I call him.
Mm.
Because he was given the safe conduct on the day of Ashura and before that, because of the affiliations that he had with some of the commanders in the armed forces, you know,
we can't say, tribal ties.
Yeah, the tribal ties and so on. He didn't accept it and said that never, ever, I would never leave my master, my Imam, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So let's talk a little bit about what happened in the mind of Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas on that day. I mean, I want to get to the very, you know, thinking and the reasoning of Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas on that day.
Yeah.
It's a really very difficult, I know, picturing that, yeah, how he thought, you know.
It's a very good, actually, example,
yes,
of being, the loyalty of Hazrat Abul Fazl is explained in that, yes, story, that he was offered a license of immunity. There was something, yes, like that patronship. They said, okay, we can be your patron. You can just save your life.
Safe conduct, that's right.
Yes, and yes, then, but your master, Imam Hussein, will be under threat.
Yes.
So what Hadrat Abul Fadl did can be analyzed on different levels. Mm-hmm. One level is in the value system of Hadrat Abul Fadl.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like this exists.
Yes.
To just save your life and leave your master, leave your brother alone under threat.
Yes.
So that's why he had such harsh reaction. La'anaka Allah. May, yes, God curse you, and may God curse your license, yes, of immunity for me. Well, you wanna make me immune, and make me safe while my leader is under threat.
And this is beautiful that he calls him my leader, my,
yes,
master, and,
yes,
not my brother. I mean, it has nothing to do with this family relation,
yes,
family ties between the two.
Yeah, so it's based on this velaya system.
Velaya system, that's right.
So, but then there's this misunderstanding. Some people think this is, okay, an emotional, moral, ethical stance, mm-hmm, and it doesn't have a strategic stance.
Yes.
So now, if you can save your life, now that we are in the same society, in the same community of Muslims,
mm-hmm,
you just look for some escape route and then let those people who are being slaughtered. Just save, okay, your life.
Mm-hmm.
To this, Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, at the beginning of starting his campaigns, مَنْ لَهَقَ بِي إِسْتَشْهَدْ وَمَنْ تَخَلَّفْ عَنِّي لَمْ يَبْلُغَ الْفَتْحِ. If you think you just save your life from not joining my movement,
yes,
don't think that you're going to see ever again victory.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be enslaved for the rest of your life.
Yes.
So I'm saying that if Hadrat Abul Fadl put aside all those ethical, moral, and value of loyalty,
yes,
even strategically thinking, at that juncture, at that moment, if you choose to take immunity and betray your master, what happens to you is that for the rest of your life, people will know you as a person who betrayed his own master.
Yes.
And now you should welcome a life of being enslaved,
mm-hmm,
being inferior in society.
Yes.
So this, I'm trying to say, what you see as a moral value is not just a moral value.
Yes.
It's a strategic decision that has benefits for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to live the rest of your life as slave, then yes, that option is available for,
okay,
you. But do you want to take it, really?
Uh-huh.
Because there might be, as I said, some calculation like this. Okay, let us betray the resistance.
Yes.
And then we can have good relations with this superpowers, with this Zionist or whatever, we can just normalize with them.
That's right.
But people will realize you have betrayed your own people just to be the slave of these oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of your, okay, life, you will have a very problematic life.
That's it. So we had two types of reasoning, I mean, on that time. One reasoning say that give Abul Fazl Abbas the safe conduct. So logically, he has to accept it.
Mm.
But all of a sudden, it is confronted by another logical system. It says that, okay, loyalty to me is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I have this logic of loyalty so that I am not short-sighted. I mean, in the long run, he had this basira, this insight. I mean, that's important. So sometimes there are two reasoning powers over there. Both of them, logically speaking, even with today's minds, today's, okay, calculation system, they'll be right in their own
for
system.
The short term.
For the short term.
Yeah.
But what is beautiful is that one of them has this long-sightedness, yes, and this insight in the long run. This, yeah, is what makes...
They say in the modern time, they have replaced wisdom with being smart.
Uh-huh.
Wisdom, yes, has foresight in it.
Yes.
They say it's a good thing to be smart, but, yes, nowadays you don't hear it's a good thing to be wise.
To be wise.
Being smart is for short-term decisions, but very being nice, wise is for long-term, mm-hmm, decisions. Yeah.
All right. That's,
yeah,
it.
Very nice.
Thank you, Sheikh Latifi and Sayyid Madarisi, for being with us. Beautiful character, Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas, and so much to say. Let's take a break, and then we'll continue our live edition on IRIB English Radio. Today's producer by the live edition is Sadiq Siddiqui. The assistant is Brother Sayyid Ali Husseinian. Thank you, the team, the beautiful team over here. You know, we have for more than 8-9 days, we are having live editions on IRIB English Radio. Thanks for the efforts that all are made by our media team over here at IRIB English Radio. Taking a break, you and Hussein, and then we'll continue our discussion.
Karbala, why do you hold such memories? Ashura,
if I visit Imam al-Hussein now, I will tell him, Imam Hussein, it is very good that I have come for your ziyarah. I don't know what to pray for right now and what to ask from you. Just that I'm visiting you and I have the opportunity to do ziyarah and visit you and see you and meet with you. That's enough for me. My prayer has been answered. Okay. There is nothing else I want from you. I want from you to always make me a lover of you. I want you to purify my heart. I have committed many sins. I probably am not worthy of even speaking to you. But you are so kind that you have accepted me. And now I have the honor to be with you. Imam Hussein, there are many people who want to visit you. I pray that they have the chance, the privilege to visit you, visit your shrine, to go and see the shrine of you and your brother, Abul Fadl al-Abbas. This is a wish of all Muslims to have the privilege to visit your shrine and your brother's shrine. I ask you to give well-being to all of those who are sick. I beg you to cure all the sick people in the world, especially Muslims. I myself am one of those. We're all sick in the heart. We have so many defects that only you and your progeny are able to cure those sicknesses.
Change there was between Abbas, Zainab, and Hussein. If only present you had been. My master, have you but seen what exchange there was between Abbas, Zainab?
Welcome back. You're listening to us live on IRIB English Radio with me, Atta, the host of this program. I'm joined here by Sheikh Latifi, Sayyid Madarisi, and we are talking about the reasoning and the logic behind resistance, especially embodied in the character of Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas. So many people were present, Sayyid Madarisi, on the day of Ashura 61 AH, you know, and accompanied Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the closest members of his families, and his sons, you know, and so many of the faithful companions. But the name of Abul Fazl Abbas over there and his loyalty to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the rationality and the logic that he shown of the resistance, you know, framing a type of new definition, mm-hmm, for loyalty and resistance outlasted the event itself up to today, that you could see that whenever the people go to Karbala, there are two holy shrines, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and Zadab al-Fazl Abbas, on a par. I mean, and this made it everlasting for such, we can say, a character. So let's talk a little bit more about this
aspect.
I mean, yes, the mindset is better to say of Hazrat al-Fazl Abbas on that day. So before that, not much information is given about the lifestyle of Hazrat al-Fazl Abbas, but we know that he has always shown this loyalty to the family of the Ahlul Bayt. He was nurtured in this way to have respect for the family of Imam Ali alayhi salam and then his Mawla, Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So what was the main logic behind his actions on that day?
The main logic, I think, that actually envelops both logic, emotions, everything that you just mentioned, is how he devoted himself to wilaya. And not his brother, but to wilaya.
He devoted.
Yes. This complete and utmost form and formation of devotion to guardianship and wilaya is what actually showed that. And he actually, you know, he showed that this devotion to wilaya is more than emotional. Why? More than something like the word of love that we use for today, mundane things. No, it's more than that. Why? Because in today's lives, if you have love for someone or something, you reaching it means the others are prevented from reaching it. So devotion to wilaya is way more beyond it. Devotion to wilaya is not like a race where you win and all the others lose. Devotion to wilaya is not like watching a football match. I mean, and today's, I mean, FIFA, I mean,
World Cup,
yeah. You see, if one team scores, means the others has lost. But devotion to wilaya is not like that. Devotion to wilaya is not like other types of sports like wrestling, when where you winning means the other, the enemy has put the enemy to the ground. It's more akin to a mountain climbing. What do you do in mountain climbing? Not only you do try and do your best to achieve that mountaintop, but you do try to get others with you. And this means that your arrival at the top does not mean that others are prevented from reaching that mountaintop. And in this journey, everyone can be a winner. Can be a winner. And this is a competition in compassion, in lovemaking. This is the kind of love, and this is the kind of compassion and passion that actually we see in the devotion and wilaya of
Love is usually defined in terms of the we can say emotional behavior of the people, but
this is the frame that we should translate the
divine
emotion.
Divine love that we are talking about over here is by Hazrat al-Fazl Abbas. In today's world and in the contemporary Islamic Republic of Iran, the character of Shahid Qasem Soleimani, who is very much, we can say, recalling and reminiscent of the actions that was taken place by Hazrat al-Fazl Abbas, the loyalty that he had to the, we can say, his leader of the time, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And on different occasions, after his martyrdom, the martyred leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has referred to this sincere behavior of Haj Qasem Soleimani, a man that still his name is repeated on and off in the words and the spoken words of the statesman of the United States of America. Such a We can't say the mindset is overwhelmed by this character, the hero of Islamic Republic of Iran. So this is the place that the cost of resistance is transferred into a kind of capital, Shaykh Hussein Latifi. And the blood of the martyrs like Haj Qasem Soleimani and so many other martyrs is not a loss. It is a spiritual and social capital. So let's talk a little bit about this capital. What are people? I mean, this is the main secret to the survival of Islamic Republic of Iran today, isn't it? Capital.
Yes, actually, the analogy and the resemblance between Haj Qasem Soleimani and Hazrat al-Fazl emerged naturally in the mind of people based on certain things. One of them was the picture that we received from his martyrdom was his hand, severed hand. Reminding everyone of the severed hand of Abu Hadr al-Abbas. That was one thing. The other thing was that he was the standard bearer of the army of resistance, something like that. And he was the one upon whom the leader, was counting, like the way Imam Hussein was counting on Abul Fadl Abbas. Yes. So the leader was counting on him on the resistance front. And also the other thing was that he was the type of person, Hazrat Qasim Soleimani, who would do the job, okay? You have some people like this. Some people, they just want to report on what they, what effort they made.
A practitioner, he was a practical man, that's right.
But yeah, what he was pragmatic, he would, the leader would tell him, go and do this, and he would come back, said, okay, it's done. Mm-hmm. It's like, again, Hadhrat Abul Fadl Abbas. So in this,
as we could see his beautiful endeavors and efforts in confronting ISIS.
Yes, yes.
You know, in the region.
And
Syria,
he was setting, he was setting timeline. He was setting for, saying for after 2 months, we don't have ISIS, something like this. And he was fulfilling all of those promises.
Have you ever seen these engineering processes? They put a stopwatch over there, so and so, we are going to do that. Al-Qasim was the engineer, the true strategist, as they call it. Okay,
he was so much in control of the whole region.
Yeah.
And as you said, people still, those murderers cannot take his name out of the name.
No. Recently, Donald Trump again
said that. He's clearly haunted by Al-Qasim. You can
He said that. This yellow pig, see such nasty words out of the mouth of nastiest men on the world, you know. He said that without removing Qasim Soleimani, we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So without removing Abul Fazl Abbas, they couldn't get into the tents. Yes. They couldn't march to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. I mean, this is what the true men, you know, of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala did, you know, supporting Walaya, supporting the right path. And it's still, it is being repeated that
The way that history in Shia repeats itself.
Yes, itself, that's right.
How people are inspired by this and how people are guided is the beauty in this ideology, in this path.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we say that surrender is good. I mean, surrender to the good people of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is good. I mean, when you show absolute loyalty and total surrender to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, whatever your master and mawla says, you accept it. This type of surrender is also beautiful, said Mudarrisi. I mean, this is not surrender. I mean, in terms of what we see, for example, before an enemy of Allah.
Let me just approach to your question just with this kind of perspective that some people might have. And they think that, yes, this is absolutely surrender.
Submission,
and that's what
that's
we don't... Yeah, that's why we don't accept it. Mm-hmm. Why should we surrender ourselves? Why are we Muslim? Some people say Muslim means you have to surrender. No, this is way more beyond. This is just exactly like what Abul Fadl Abbas did.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the very same time being rational and at the very same time being devoted.
Mm-hmm.
You see, what our problem is, I think that in this world, we see that reality has been reduced into something measurable.
Yes.
Something that can be calculated, something that can be measured.
Yes.
And every Western philosopher says such and such, and that this is thinkers. Mm-hmm. I mean, taught the modern West, they taught us that we regard this nature as something that is measurable, that can be measured, that can be understood, can be calculated.
Yes.
So anything not related to this is not acceptable for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, what Abul Fadl Abbas alayhi salam did for us and showed us, what he proved us, is that there are some other calculations going on. You see, this mentality, this kind of rationality that I just mentioned, this kind of rationality cannot understand what victory means.
Yes.
This kind of rationality does not believe كَمْ مِنْ فِئَةٍ قَلِيلَةٍ غَلَبَتْ فِئَةً كَثِيرَةً بِإِذْنِ اللَّهِ.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of rationality does not believe that martyrs can be alive.
Yes.
So that's why he says, such yellow pig says that I believe that we should have killed Qasim Soleimani if we wanted to achieve this level.
Yes.
He does not believe that he is alive. He cannot believe, but he actually... Sheikh Latifi mentioned he's haunted by him.
Yes, he's haunted.
He's haunted by him.
Yes.
So this kind of mentality struggles to understand what victory means beyond numerical calculations and the number of number of soldiers and number of marines and number of fighters.
Very good.
This is way more beyond.
This
is the kind of rationality that we should try to avoid.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It is so, and truly, not only Shahid Qasim Soleimani, but all these commanders we have lost. Shahid Bagheri, Shahid Abdurrahim Musavi, you know, original from the city of Qom, Abdullah too. You know, whenever they go and they talk about this wilaya system, this type of loyalty to their leader. So, and being martyred on his path for the people of Iran, for the axis of resistance, for the sake of the leader. And this is that, unfortunately, the enemies of Islam has always miscalculated about. I mean, according to their calculation system, I mean, the Western ones, this is illogical to go and die for a higher purpose, losing your life. But in their calculation system, martyrdom is the final goal. They lose their life for the sake of supporting and guarding this Islamic system. And this is maybe the secret and the key to the success for the survival of the Islamic Republic of Iran after losing its leadership and maybe three important layers of its commanding high-ranking rulers. And these successors and the substitutes that are coming are also nurtured with such an ideology. This makes it very much beautiful during the history of the world. All right. So, Sheikh Latifi, your final remarks today's discussion, Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas and his loyalty.
Yes.
And still we are going out with the same logic, isn't it? With maybe in the negotiations or through war. I mean, this is not something that is limited only to the wartime. I mean, the logic
should be applied.
Should be applied in both negotiations and the war.
As long as, because the target and the goal is justice, okay?
Yes.
We are not seeking dominance, like Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, "Inni la akhruju ashran wala batran."
It's
not that we are seeking to create trouble for anyone. We are seeing something is wrong, deeply wrong, with the international relationship, with the order of the world, and we cannot just accept that either in the form of hard resistance or in the soft resistance that we have in diplomacy.
Right.
So all of these, we have lessons of these in the seerah of our imams.
Yes.
Soft resistance, we call it taqiyya. Hard resistance, we have the case of Karbala. It's not that we launch a war. It's not that we support a war. It's actually that we resist against those who want to achieve their goals through wars, through killing. Even the definition of terrorism, the Sayyid was beautifully describing how Shaytan built his empire on terror, on fear. And that the word terrorist actually befits these people. They want to terrorize people. They want to tell people, okay, if you want to achieve justice, if you want to have your resources, you're going to go through things like Gaza and everything. And we want to tell the world, no, this is not the case. So, and as you said, what we have in the commanders and the leaders of the Islamic Republic, it's a very unique thing. I think that people in the West, they feel envious of this because they don't have such a thing.
Yes.
They don't have a general that is killed in the battlefield. And then people go to his grave, like Amir Musavi, the one that you
mentioned. Abdurrahim al-Musavi,
that's right. Just go, his tomb is in the shrine of Lady Fatima Masuma.
Yes.
Just go and there, everyone, every time that you go, at the middle of the night, there are many people around his grave.
Yes.
So this does not exist. Mm. They just have a formal ceremony of a fallen soldier or whatever.
Yes.
And he's forgotten like he didn't exist at all.
Or the veteran days or something like
that. Yeah, something very formal thing, governmental, state-sponsored ceremonies and finished. But this is in the heart of people.
In the heart.
Loyalty to Velaya brings for you loyalty.
And sorry, this is not the fruit of only being martyred because they lived like martyrs, you know?
Yes,
when you look at the lifestyles of martyrs like Qasim Soleimani or Shahid Bagheri or Abdurrahim Musavi or, for example, Tang Siri, Haji Zadeh, you know, all of this one, when you look at the lifestyles, you know, being among the people, living like a shahid, I mean, living like
this
a
martyr. This is the phrase, this is the phrase of Haji Qasim himself. In order to get martyred, you have to live like a martyr.
You have to live like a martyr.
And people see that, especially in the lives, some of them are very noticeable, like 2 days ago, we had the martyrdom anniversary of Shahid Chamran. After 40 years, people have not forgotten this because he was very inspiring for a whole generation of people who have studied in university. And then the line continues. Like in Haj Qasim, he was Arif in a sense, like Chamran.
Yes.
Shahid Larijani, he was academically achieved very well. And then, so you have good examples for anyone who is in the society that they can look up to these examples and say, okay, I can be like Chamran, I can be like Larijani, I can be like Haj Qasim.
That's it. Said Mudarrisi, your final remarks?
I would say after the very last incident that we went through, the whole landscape has changed in the whole world. And we must use the lessons, put the lessons that we learned from Ashura movement, put it into practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to change our calculations. This new era that has begun means that Iran, our country, and the resistance front, all of them, have reached a very higher level. And the Western side in the America has become desperate. But this entire landscape that has changed and has been transformed must be fully absorbed by the people, by the thinkers, and specifically, I would say, by the decision makers. They have to understand this change that we have went through. And what is taking place is that we are seeing the shedding of an older system of calculation and assessment. And this should be put into practice. We should see by our decision makers, by the very people, that they have proved it, that they are not afraid anymore of this hegemonic powers, of the threats. People are letting go of their fears that Satan is building its empire on.
That's right. All right. Thank you, Sayyid Mudarrisi and Sheikh Latifi. For when the standard falls from hands, another takes its place. The loyal heart, the clear eyed soul runs endless through the race. From Abbas to General Qasim Soleimani, the covenant remains. And what is the covenant? We drink not while the truth is parched, nor flee from righteous pains. Beautiful poem about the resemblance that is made between Haj Qasim Soleimani and Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas, and the logic and the reasoning behind their actions. 61 AH and contemporary Islamic Republic of Iran, and the story goes on and on and on with more devoted people and loyal people to this holy shrine, as Hazrat, Abul Fazl Abbas, you know, the cities of Karbala, you know, Najaf, Mashhad, Qom, and Haj Qasim Soleimani has put it this way, that this land is like a holy shrine. I mean, if it is lost, all the holy shrines are lost. If you safeguard it, all the holy shrines are safeguarded. Sheikh Latifi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Sayyid Mudarrisi, thank you very much for being
my
present.
My honor to be here with you.
Thank you.
Sheikh Latifi.
Fruitful discussion on the ninth day of Muharram. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for being with us, with me, Atta, the host of this program. We again extend our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and this month of Muharram. Since it is a different month of Muharram for the people of Iran, they lost their beloved leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. So many beautiful souls, so many beautiful children, the school children of Minab. And yesterday, the mayor, I think, of Hormozgan has said that
Remains of the students?
No. One of the missiles attacked directly Makan Nasiri.
Yeah.
And that is why nobody parts of this beloved child is found.
And there's this thing that 80 body parts collectively
from all of these are going
to be buried. And this is
the bloodshed. This is the genocide that took place in Gaza, Islamic Republic of Iran. They will not limit themselves up to here. Yeah. They will come.
They have this obsession with killing the kids. You don't know why.
As Ayatollah Khamenei has put it, they are going to devour.
Yeah.
We can't say all. And alhamdulillah, the resistance power has showed good counter strikes, and inshallah, the enemies of Islam will get down to the knees and bow down to the knees before the resistance movement and the axis of movement all across the world, not only in the region and all across the world. Thanks again for being with us. For more information, you can also visit our website, iranradio.ir. Tomorrow, on the day of Ashura, we have a special edition, live edition for you, about more than 1 hour, 1 hour and a half. Thanks again, our team over here, Sadiq Sadiri, Ali Hosseinian, in the control room for producing this live edition. Thank you very much for being with us. To another episode, God bless you all. Assalamu alaikum, ya Abu Abdullah.
we the Shia today gather the son of Ali. We all remember. Till dawn shall mourn together. We'll cry for the sign of Haydar every night, every day. I'll say